possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Stick around for the big picture, WMFO Medford. Have a good night, everybody.
Slip inside the eye of your mind. Don't you know you might find a better place to play? You said that you've never been, but all the things that you've seen slowly fade away. So I start a revolution from my bed, 'cause you said the brains I had.
Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just got invited to the prom. Do you A, meet her date?
I need to see your past date report cards, your driver's license, a list of references, and this hair sample.
B, help her pick out a dress.
Don't you just love the long sleeves and turtleneck on this pantsuit?
Ugh.
C, attend the prom undercover.
Mom, what are you doing here?
I'm not Mom, I'm Calvin, the new kid at school.
Or D, capture her big moment.
Let's take a photo of you two. I'm in the middle.
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Not the hard way, not that way, it's the time. his ears. He resides on a beach in the town where I am going to live. And I often ask him, are you looking for the mother love?
W-M-F.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. Write that number down. Punch it into your phone. 855-915-9636. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, simmering, burning, out of control holiday controversy.
Yes, apparently if we enjoy the holidays anymore, we're all going to hell.
It's all bad. It's all bad. All the tradition is bad. All the millennials are bent out of shape. The snowflakes are melting, and it's the holiday season. They're supposed to be blowing around, but instead they're melting. We'll get into that. And believe me, there's not just one facet to this. All aspects of our holiday traditions are under attack, but mostly the entertainment ones. And this isn't the usual Merry Christmas is bad thing, by the way.
Yeah.
We're not.
This isn't a happy holidays, we're angry at Starbucks for cups thing.
This isn't that stupid. This is a new form of stupid that joins us this holiday season. And honestly, I predicted a couple of these a few years ago. So we'll be getting into that. And of course, all of the usual nonsense before on the Tell Mikey D is here at 9 o'clock tonight. So let me press a button. I think it is.
Oh,
that.
You're so good at pressing buttons.
Yeah, I'm real good at pressing buttons. And see, I press the button and nothing happens. Because,
see, you can totally do it. I have faith in you.
Oh, my God. I hate having all these buttons. Back in the old days, like, you just pressed the buttons on the board and everything just sort of happened miraculously because everything was connected. Now, I got to press one button to do one thing and another button to do another thing, and that's not...
Oh, being senile is so frustrating, isn't it, Derek?
No, I'm saying things worked the way they were supposed to years ago, and they don't anymore, so you can stop with that. What do you got? Did you hear?
Let's say in local news, I want to go Lawrence, $4.95.
Oh, that would be the, yeah, I still want to know what happened with this.
Yeah,
that,
me too. I keep updating my news alerts to see if they've actually come up with an explanation.
So the best thing that I've heard about this so far, if you were up anywhere near 495, 93, Route 28 earlier today, you know that there was a massive, massive traffic jam, which was caused by a woman in an SUV who drifted across the median and hit.
And we still don't know why.
No.
That's the best part, is that we have no idea why. And it was at 11:52 a.m. So it's not even like it was like 11:52 p.m. And it's like, oh, she had a little too much to drink or something like that.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, I guess that could happen at 11:52 a.m.
So she killed herself when she hit the other SUV. She hit a passenger in the other SUV. Mm-hmm. And they had to close the highway down for an extended period of time to reconstruct the accident. Med-flight helicopters were involved in this. Six cars involved in the accident. Just a complete horror show up there.
Yeah, so it was a Kia Sportage. She was traveling southbound and just somehow crossed over the median into the northbound lanes. The Kia sideswiped a Ford F-350, which that guy was fine, but then struck a Honda Pilot head-on and a Toyota RAV4. And both the driver of the Kia and the 56-year-old male passenger of the Honda were pronounced dead at the scene.
Yep.
The 55-year-old female driver of the Honda was taken by medical helicopter to Lawrence General Hospital with serious injuries that she then died from. The 58-year-old driver of the RAV4 and her 27-year-old passenger were also transported by ambulance to the hospital with injuries, but not, they're going to live.
Yeah.
But in the end, like you said, Derek, it's just like, it involved six cars. And I have experienced that once in all of the driving that I've done, where someone was just straight up driving down the wrong side of the highway. And the question is always like, how did you even manage to do this?
Yeah. Well, we may find out that she had some kind of a medical episode, or, you know, this.
I was gonna say, that's what I'm hoping.
It's something weird to be wrong, like, with the vehicle.
It's weird to be like, I hope she was having a seizure, but
blew a tire, blew an axle, this sort of thing. I, by the way, have been the person driving the wrong way on the road, but that was that god-awful Storo Drive interchange. Out there by the Harvard, out past the Harvard Boathouse, where at night you have no idea which way you're supposed to go, and everything is poorly lit with poor signage. And I wound up on Storo Drive inbound, or I wound up on Storo Drive outbound
when you're trying to
going inbound. And my passenger was like, "Why are the signs facing the wrong way?" And then we saw headlights coming at us. Now, fortunately, this was like 2:30 in the morning. So I was able to execute a U-turn and correct my mistake, but
I was going to say, the only time that I've ever inadvertently done that was, if you're familiar with Dorchester at all, there's an area in the Neponset where there's just like 9 different turnarounds.
Oh, yeah.
And I turned onto the wrong turnaround, and I'm like, this feels wrong.
Yeah.
And then I saw headlights coming towards me. He was like, yeah, this is definitely wrong.
Yeah. There's that great stretch of Route 28 down through Yarmouth, which on a foggy night, like, south is one set of lanes and north is the other set of lanes, and there's that big divider down the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And it's
I know just what you're talking about,
it's real easy in the fog to wind up on the wrong side of that thing, so... But $4.95, man, I don't know what's going on with that. Storo Drive, staying on the traffic theme.
Storo Drive.
Yes.
I don't know.
Keeping with the traffic theme issue, the Massachusetts Department of Transportation repainted all the lines between...
Oh, I've experienced this.
Leverett Circle and Charles Circle, and changed the signs. And they now say, in their infinite wisdom, that this has improved capacity on the road. Because now, people who are in the left-hand lane can, through some miracle of physics, bypass the exit and stay in the left-hand lane. It doesn't work that way. Like, if you're in that left-hand lane, you're going up that ramp. And they're like, oh, this fixed traffic. And it's like, it improved capacity.
No, it made it way more terrifying.
And it's like, no, it didn't. Because everybody who's in that left-hand lane is still trying to get into the center lane to get over and keep going on Storrow Drive. Meanwhile, everybody who came on from Museum of Science is trying to get across two lanes of traffic to get into the left-hand lane if they want to go to Charles Circle. And Charles Circle, meanwhile, has probably backed up because the traffic light regularly backs traffic up onto Storrow Drive.
Oh, honestly, I mean, I work in Kendall Square, and the easiest way to get to where I work is Route 28, which anyone who drives in Boston
no,
knows.
No, it's not, because you have to go through that.
Feeds. I was going to say, well, the theoretically most direct route, let's put it that way.
Oh, it may be the shortest route in distance.
Yeah, in terms of the whole, like, shortest distance is a straight line concept. But I can't tell you how many times I've sat at that stupid intersection being like, you bunch of dummies going on Storrow. I hate you so much.
In terms of pain and heartbreak, it is the longest possible route anyone could ever hope to take. Best avoided at any time of day, but particularly between the hours of 8 a.m. and 7 p.m.
I would say particularly when people are awake, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, so in national news, I have a softball and a hardball. I'm throwing the hardball.
Give me a hardball.
Let's see.
I'm guessing they
U.S. Border Patrol.
I'm guessing they relate to the same topic. No, I'm guessing they don't relate to the same topic. U.S. No. Border Patrol.
The same topic would be the softball I could have thrown you.
Is this the migrants climbing over the fence and throwing children over the fence? They fired tear gas at the caravan.
Here, I'll make it a little bit easier. U.S. Border Patrol agent.
Is this the guy that went on CNN and I'm trying to think of what the heck he said.
No, it's not that.
Okay.
So prosecutors in Texas are seeking the death penalty against a U.S. Border Patrol agent accused of killing four women after a grand jury returned a capital murder indictment today. The agent, whose name, this is, I think, the most ironic thing, is that he has a Spanish name. His name is Juan David Ortiz. Is suspected in the killings of four women and the kidnapping of a fifth in rural Texas. Ortiz is being held on a $2.5 million bond. The grand jury updated the original charge against Ortiz, who's 35. He's 3 years older than me. That's what, like, blows my mind about this. But he had faced four counts of murder and one count of unlawful restraint and one count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He had been on Border Patrol for 10 years and is a Navy veteran, but he was arrested after a woman he allegedly tried to kidnap escaped from his pickup truck and sought help from police back in September. The woman's story prompted an investigation that led authorities to realize that Ortiz was potentially responsible for four killings within the span of about 2 weeks that he thought he would get away with because they were illegal.
So dude likes to rape and murder women is what we're looking at here.
Yep. I mean, to his, I'm in no way defending this, but to his logic, I mean, especially considering the climate that we're in right now in terms of people trying to emigrate from Mexico, he was probably, like, if you want to kidnap, rape, and murder women, maybe do it with the ones that the president is telling us that it's, oh, we don't want to let them in anyways. Like, if you're, I'm not defending it, like I said, at all, but I'm saying, like, if you want to get away with it, like, I can see the man's very skewed, very terrible logic.
Well, I think that's a huge reach. I think it's more a case you've got a serial killer committing crimes of opportunity.
That's what I'm saying, because is that he's a serial killer that's using the prime opportunity, which is that more now than ever, there's a very large idea of just kind of letting people trying to emigrate fall by the wayside.
When you think about it, if you are a serial killer, that's probably a pretty good job to have, because you're picking people up in the middle of the night. Nobody knows that they're there. Nobody knows where they've come from or where they're going to go. And no one is going to know exactly at what point in their trip north they disappeared. So, yeah, this guy, that's four that we know of.
Exactly. Like, there's literally an episode of Dexter about this.
Yeah.
That's one of the people Dexter kills is a guy who does this.
Yeah, that's four of the people, that's four that we know of. And
yeah.
How long has he been working for Border Patrol?
A decade.
There's more.
There has to be.
There's got to be more.
Like I said, it's just that it's so easy to, unfortunately, it's so easy in this day and age to make immigrants disappear.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I had not heard about that. I've been focused on everything that's happening with the caravan. We haven't talked about it because there isn't any resolution to it.
That's the thing, is that, I mean, if we spoke about it, it would be like banging our heads against a wall.
Yeah. Bob Dole.
Bob Dole. That is not the Republican I thought you were going to mention.
Bob Dole says this is good for Bob Dole. You're talking about Bob Dole on the radio. Bob Dole loves it when you talk about Bob Dole.
I was going to say, my goodness, I haven't talked about Bob Dole in a long time. Is this about the funeral?
Yes.
Yes, he saluted George H.W.'s.
He did. There are moments that break through in media and moments that break through in places like museums. I will tell you one of the most moving things that I've seen over the last few years in a museum was when the John F. Kennedy Library right here in Boston had an exhibit about JFK's funeral. They had the beret that a Green Beret had left at his grave as a sign of respect for the president. And seeing Bob Dole get up out of that wheelchair, the age of 95, barely able to stand, to salute his former commander-in-chief is one of those moments that just breaks through and you realize this was someone important.
Heart. Yeah.
This was someone who commanded a level of respect that is in very short supply in our world today.
Absolutely.
George Bush, 41, was the first president that I was able to vote for. And I voted.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that.
And I voted for him very happily in 1988. I knew both candidates in that. You know, it was my first presidential election. I was read up. I was studied up on everything. I was a freshman in college, communications major, news junkie, former high school newspaper reporter. I mean, I went into this informed. And
I'm ready to vote.
I'll say this. George H.W. Bush, even at that stage, was not inspiring because we just had 8 years of Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan was the perfect television president. You don't get better than Reagan. But George Bush was somebody who was clearly qualified and prepared to hold that office. Mike Dukakis, no. Not by a long shot. The Massachusetts miracle was already falling apart by that point.
I forgot that was who ran against him.
They had the picture of him sitting in the tank trying to make him look like he could, you know, run our military or whatever the heck they were doing. It's like, you're going to give me Mike Dukakis, you know, peering over the top of a tank versus a guy who ran the CIA. No.
Well, what I loved about that Bob Dole did that is the, you brought up Kennedy. Him standing, I felt it was such a kind of fitting juxtaposition that him standing up and saluting reminded me of, and obviously I was 30 years from being alive when Kennedy was shot, but of John saluting at JFK's funeral.
That's another one of those moments that just
it's just like an epic piece of American history. But I thought that it was such a, I mean, I would be shocked if there wasn't someone that already created a meme that's John saluting Kennedy and then, or John Kennedy saluting his father and Bob Dole saluting George H.W. But it is, I mean, I feel like a lot of times, especially with the kind of unrest that's happening in our country right now, there's a lot of, there can be a lack of patriotism at times. But as I always say, even if as our listeners know, I hate Donald Trump. I hate our president. I really do. And that's not me making a threat. So I'm not going to do anything about it. But I still am so proud, like, to be a citizen of this country, especially knowing, like, I remember the one time I tried to do OkCupid, I think I've told you about this, and I think I've told our listeners about this. They have you fill out all these questions, and once you fill out a certain amount, they tell you all this stuff about yourself. And one of the things that they tell you is, other than the country you live in, the top five places you're most likely to find love, and the top five places that you're least likely to find love. And my number one for least likely was Saudi Arabia. And it made me look into the way women are treated in Saudi Arabia. And I remember I texted my, like, I'm reading all about all of this, and I texted my father saying, I know this wasn't you, it was your grandparents, but thank you so much for having me be born here. Like, this was not that Ireland would have been that much worse or, like, that bad, but I just remember being like, I can't believe that I there are women just like me who may have the exact same thoughts as me intrinsically that are being treated this way. And it's, I think, despite the political unrest in our country right now, that's not something to shake away from. It's not something to...
And I will say this, because I know a lot of, you know, listeners here at Tufts have no idea what life was like during the Bush presidency. You weren't alive back then. I was.
But I was, like, learning how to read.
Yeah. For Reagan as well. George Bush carried 40 states. Massachusetts was among the 10 that he lost. 53.5%, just about, of the popular vote. So he won by a very, very convincing margin. And that was with Dan Quayle as his vice president. And
Dan Quayle.
I will tell you.
I still giggle. Like, I had to retrospectively look up stuff about Dan
Quayle. Oh, boy. You know, those of us who were all in on Bush saw Dan Quayle show up at the Republican National Convention and said, oh, God, really? Are they trying to lose this? But here's the thing. 1988, America had been riding a wave of prosperity. Things were generally good. Ronald Reagan was looked upon as sort of the, you know, benevolent grandfather. Everybody, a lot of people liked him. Was there dissent? Yes, there was. Was Ronald Reagan notoriously bad on some significant social issues? Yes, he was. Particularly the AIDS crisis is a big,
yes,
big
absolutely.
Thing.
I was going to say, that was, like, the most I've ever read about Ronald Reagan, who was president when I was born.
Yeah.
That is... the biggest thing, that and jelly beans.
Badly mishandled by the Reagan administration and sort of waved off by the Reagan administration as a gay problem. And that was not a good look for the White House.
Oh, absolutely not.
George Herbert Walker Bush represented that sort of genteel, wise, fair-minded patrician ideal that the upper classes in America developed during the 20th century, where it was basically, you know, the rich are your friends. The rich are people to emulate. The rich have good ideas, and the rich are interested in the welfare of the people. And George H.W. Bush himself went a bit further than that. George H.W. Bush was a guy who really cared about people and really cared about being fair-minded and really cared about bringing out the best in the American people.
Yeah.
The mistakes that he made, on the one hand, were to stay too close to conservative lines. And there are political reasons why this happened. But ultimately, the main form that that took was he upheld anti-gay policies that had been enacted during the Reagan administration, which really did not endear him to anybody on the left. The other thing that he did was, as a pragmatist, as somebody who understood the way that economies work, he raised taxes after he promised he would not raise taxes. And he was pilloried for this by the Republican Party. That combination of factors opened the door for Bill Clinton to come in. Even after George Bush drove back Saddam Hussein and won the Gulf War in less than a month.
Well, the irony of that, though, is I think pragmatist is the perfect word to use. The irony of that is that it actually proved what a diplomatic president he was, because despite the fact that he was a Republican, he sought what was the best overall for the American people. And that's, again, I was a child when he was president.
Yeah.
Like, the first president I really, truly remember is Bill Clinton. But at the same time, I can appreciate, like, my father loved Bush, the first one. Like, loved him. And loved Reagan. But, I promised. Hey, Mo, I know you're listening. I promised
Reagan,
my mom I'd say hi.
Reagan was a little bit easier to love than Bush because Reagan had more personality.
Because he was adorable.
But
even when Alzheimer's kicked in, you were just like, aw, you used to be in the movies.
One of the two of the most defining moments of the Bush presidency, one is his decision to raise taxes, which he had no choice. He promised he wasn't going to do it.
That's the thing, is that he did it not, like, he was one of the people who did not just cater to the wishes of his party. He catered to what was best for the American people.
The other, and one that sort of gets overlooked by a lot of people, but certainly would not be overlooked by people who remember that time, was the fall of the Berlin Wall and the very real possibility that Russia and the United States would find themselves in an open military conflict over this, because no one knew how that was going to play out. And George Bush and Mikhail Gorbachev had a very warm relationship with each other, had a very good understanding of each other. And as the wall was coming down, the two of them are on the phone with each other, basically promising each other, we are going to take no action. Germany can do what Germany wants. And that was a huge concession on both sides, because Germany may have emerged from that and said, hey, you know what, we're going over to the Soviet way of things.
Mm.
And there wasn't much that we could do. There was a tremendous tension brewing in Poland at the same time, where Poland was attempting to win its independence from Russia and the Soviet Union, which it would do a few years later. George H.W. Bush opened the door for all of that rewriting of the Eastern Europe political map, basically by agreeing with Russia that we are not going to take any action against the other, regardless of the outcome here. We are not going to accuse the other of causing this loss of land or sovereign territory or whatever you want to call it. And that opened the door. I mean, that really is what undid the Soviet Union more than anything else.
Oh, absolutely.
And left us with the map that we have today. That was a big, big moment at a time when Russia and the United States were still two very mutually suspicious countries with massive arsenals of nuclear weapons pointed at one another.
Yeah, basically being like, who wants to touch the button first?
Yeah. And in those first hours when the Berlin, you know, when people were smashing through the Berlin Wall and running over, you know, running across no man's land, there was some genuine concern that, you know, are the Russians going to pick up arms and stop this? Are we going to have to take military action? And what is that going to look like?
I will say, on a lighter note about the Berlin Wall, two things I love are, number one, that people have paid lots of money to have a piece of it. And number two, it's so easy if you look at pictures of it to see which side is the German side and which side is the Russian side, because you look at the German side and there's all this graffiti, and it's not graffiti like gang signs. It's beautiful. Like, it's art. And on the other side, it's so stark and cold.
Yeah.
And well, speaking of foreign affairs,
I can remember, by the way, when they were selling pieces of the Berlin Wall at Christmas time at Jordan Marsh.
Oh, yeah.
Like 1990. You could go in and you could buy a piece of it to give someone as a gift.
I want
to
say, what was crazy is, like, even my brother's ex-girlfriend worked for an artist, and he was a jeweler, but like a high-end jeweler, and he had an original Warhol. He had lots of amazing art in his house, but his most prized possession was a big chunk of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
That he had framed and in a what do you call this, a shadow box. But, well, speaking of foreign affairs and Germany, Volkswagen in world news.
Volkswagen, hadn't heard anything about them. What are they doing?
Well, yesterday they announced that they're going to develop, this is actually kind of in reference to what we were speaking about last week. They're developing their final generation of vehicles using a combustion engine by 2026. And they made this shift towards battery-driven vehicles in the wake of, there was apparently a very large scandal in 2015 where they basically lied about their diesel emissions.
Yes, we remember that. Yes. We remember that well.
I was going to say, as I was reading about it, I was like, wait, yeah, this is ringing a bell. But it basically made them pay billions of dollars in fines for hiding that they were polluting the world a lot more than they were letting on. But a spokesman for Volkswagen confirmed, and there, by the way, in Europe and China, which anyone who has been there or lived there, everywhere, like when I lived in Italy, everyone has a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
Like that is the car there. And I believe it about China as well. But they're literally going to focus their, turn their focus just to electronic vehicles. Like you will not be able to get a gas powered Volkswagen within the next 10 years.
Well, that solves your emissions problem because gas vehicle or electric vehicles don't emit.
Yes.
They're zero emissions. We'll see how that works out. The only problem with those things is they don't have any range at all. And I like driving distances.
I was say, I mean, I learned to drive in a Volkswagen, but that was a 1970 bug convertible that didn't have seatbelts or a muffler. So a little different than whatever they're gearing towards.
Remember,
now.
You mean one of the good ones. We had one of those when I was growing up. Those things were the best.
That was my dad's like dream car.
Oh, that was everybody's
dream
car.
I was saying, he bought one and was just like, I rule.
Yeah.
But yep. 13 years old, learned to drive in a parking lot. I mean, 16 after I had my permit.
Those 1970s bugs were in high demand
into
the 1980s.
Cool, and they're so dangerous because the engine's in the back.
Yeah.
So if you hit someone front end, ooh, yeah. Your life's over.
Yeah, but they're also made out of some pretty solid steel.
That's true. So, I was going to say, like, you could, I remember jump starting that by putting it in neutral and just opening the door and running. They're good cars.
I got two here. They're both good. Yellow vests.
Yellow vests. Ooh, that could be about a couple things. Are you talking Paris?
Yes.
Or, okay, so.
You got it on the first try.
I was going to say, well, because there's been a response to what's happening in Paris as well. But yeah, so there's anti-tax protests in Paris where the demonstrators are basically calling themselves yellow jackets. Because that's what they're wearing.
Or yellow vests. We have to get the terminology correct. It's the gilet jaune.
Gilet jaune.
Or the gilet jaune. I believe that's a hard G. I haven't looked that up. My French language studies tell me it is a hard G, and it is the gilet jaune.
Je voudrais le fromage.
Oui.
That's what I say best in French. You guys should all remember that. If you ever go to France, you're going to get some cheese. But yeah, so demonstrators, and the reason I asked if it was in reference to is that demonstrators in Iraq are actually borrowing from the gilets jaunes because yesterday they actually did the, like, they wore the same kind of garb.
You can buy them at Home Depot.
To yeah, I mean, my ex-boyfriend's a gas line worker. He owns like five of them.
Yeah.
But yesterday Iraq kind of took a note from France, and about 100 people were just demanding. This is what's crazy is that in France it's against taxes, basically what we did, you know, what 250 odd years ago. But in Iraq, they're asking for water and electricity.
Those are things that people like to have.
Yeah.
But going back to France,
which is the
main story here.
Yeah.
The gilets jaunes were formed out of primarily conservative voters and people in rural France in response to a 28% hike in gas taxes.
That's a pretty absurd gaslight.
That
tax hike.
That President Macron had proposed.
God, you do have a good French accent.
And was prepared to enact in the name of climate change. We're going to...
Oh, come on.
We're going to solve climate change, Shay, with taxes.
By making taxes. All your wages go towards driving.
Never mind. Never mind that of all European nations, France has the lowest carbon footprint, the lowest emissions of any European nation. I'm not talking on a per capita basis. They're one of the more populous European nations. Yeah. They have lower carbon emissions. The only places in Europe that have lower carbon emissions total than France are places like Finland, where no
one
lives.
That's what I was going to say. Where your population is like nothing.
Right.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is France? I mean, they have excellent public transit. Most people either walk everywhere or ride their bikes. Like, I've been to three different parts of France. Everywhere, we were like, where are all the cars?
Yeah, but like, you know what else they have that makes a big difference?
Cigarettes?
Nuclear power. Almost all of their electricity is generated.
So I was close with cigarettes then.
Generated by nuclear power. So they have the lowest carbon emissions in the main part of continental Europe and the lowest carbon emissions of any country of a population of that size. That's not enough. We have to do more for climate change, says Macron. So they were going to put a 28% tax on fuel. Now, we've talked about gas taxes on this show in the past.
We have.
Who do gas taxes impact the most? The poor.
I was going to say, the people who have to fill their gas tank to get to work.
Where are the poor? They're out in the countryside and they have to drive to the city for their jobs. And they cannot afford that if you put a 28% tax on their fuel. So they put on their yellow vests. They rioted for a few weeks. Now, rioting is...
My goodness, these pictures are amazing.
But this is the thing. You see the pictures and you hear the headlines, rioting in Paris. Rioting is a French political tradition, okay?
Absolutely.
In the same way that we gather together large groups of people and wander around Boston Common and march up and down Commonwealth Avenue.
I was saying, not just a French political tradition. It's as strange as it sounds, it's a political tradition of the intellectual world.
Yes.
Like, you think about riots that have happened here, riots that have happened in England.
But here's the thing. France, they don't gather together and march. France doesn't have protests. France, they riot. That's what they do. It's like, yeah.
There's a picture of someone in a yellow vest in front of the Arc de Triomphe, which is amazing.
And when the French riot, they riot. They roll cars over. They set them on fire. They were smashing windows on the Champs-Élysées. The big one. The one that makes this the worst riot in 50 years in France. They spray-painted graffiti on l'Arc de Triomphe.
Oh, snap.
Which is, to put this in an American context, equivalent...
Oh, yeah, there are legitimately cars on fire.
Which is the American equivalent of spray-painting graffiti on the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes.
On Abraham Lincoln's face.
I would say, the Arc de Triomphe is... I can't say it as properly in French as you.
Yeah.
But,
That is
like one of the principal staples of like we are France.
That is a beloved national landmark, and one does not simply spray paint things on it. So Macron has backed down now on his plan to put in this 28% tax, with his one of his ministers coming out and saying it was not worth losing the unity of the nation. No, it's not. But let's expose a couple of fallacies here. Number one, you are not going to solve climate change with taxes. And the French,
the fact that this is a point that needs to be pointed out is absurd.
The French absolutely compounded this because the money that they collected from those taxes was just going to go to pay off their deficit. Wasn't going to go to infrastructure, wasn't going to go to like put up solar panels or electric cars more viable.
Or to keep art programs in schools.
We're just going to pay some bills with it. And the French people did not like that. Number two, and this is not just true in France, this is true everywhere. Support for climate change policy extends as far as the individual's wallet. And that is where the support ends. Politicians can sit around and talk about it all day long. As soon as it costs an individual a penny, they become skeptics. And that points to a much broader issue.
I was going to say that points to a bigger problem. Well, and a lot of that has to do with the, with that in mind, the miseducation involved surrounding climate change is that it's a, what's the term I'm looking for? It's a willful ignorance, because it's much easier to say, oh, global warming doesn't exist if it's threatening your bank account, as opposed to if, you know, you, as opposed to if you're just not good at science.
I think there's more to it than that, though.
Because, oh, there absolutely
because
is.
Because the reality is global warming or climate change or whatever you want to call it exists primarily as a bunch of computer models and scholarly papers. That's all that there is to support it. And what we have found out in recent years is that in some cases the computer models are wrong. In some cases the data has been monkeyed with. That this quote-unquote consensus that exists among scientists, such as alleged sex assaulter Neil deGrasse Tyson, does not in fact actually exist.
No.
We also are well aware that politicians will look for any and every opportunity to pick our pockets.
Yes, precise. Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is that, I mean, it feels similar to when a couple is having an argument, where if you put the couple in two different rooms, you speak to one partner, you speak to the other partner, and get the story about the argument, you're going to get two completely different stories. And the truth lies somewhere in the middle. And both of them are trying to get something out of their version of the story. And that is the way I feel about global warming and about the way the government and the people address the subject.
Yeah.
Which is that I truly believe that global warming exists. I also truly believe that we are misinformed on both sides about it. And for various forms of gain. By the way, I'm looking through pictures of all of this, and oh my goodness, the Guy Fawkes masks. There are so many.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another popular thing over there.
Oh, V for Vendetta is one of my favorite movies. Yeah. I don't find this shocking at all.
The French love them, some guy. But you look at it, you're like, oh my God, look at all this awful rioting.
Well,
and it's like,
I was going to say, that's one of the things I was going to bring up was Guy Fawkes, actually. Like the intelligent world likes to riot. Guy Fawkes was like the original rioter.
But it was like, look at this, right? It's like, that's a Saturday in the 11th arrondissement, all right? I mean, that's what the French do.
I would say, especially in places like the fact that they defaced the Arc de Triomphe, they were on the Champs-Élysées. Like, this wouldn't be like rioting in Dorchester. This would be like rioting in Faneuil Hall.
Yeah.
Like, this is...
But it's the point where you go too far...
Downtown.
...is when you're spray painting down with Macron on Arc de Triomphe.
That's
the French take it seriously.
No matter what issue you're protesting, I can't defend that.
It's kind of quaint that you can burn cars and smash shop windows all day long, and it's an average day. But then somebody goes and spray paints something on a monument and the whole country comes to a halt.
And on a monument that is just a cause for a rotary. What's the best part?
But that's the moment where the government says, wait a minute,
like,
this is serious.
Oh, shoot.
This is WMFO Medford, and this is going to make the FCC happy.
If you want to stay alive this holiday season, when you drink, plan not to drive. We'll tell you the reason. You could lose your license and end up doing time. Pay thousands of dollars too in lawyers' fees and fines.
This holiday season, if you plan to drink, plan how to get home safely. Designate a driver or call a cab.
Make a plan before you go, when your head is clear. Don't wait till you've had eggnog, hot wassail, or beer.
Brought to you by the Texas Department of Transportation.
Hot wassail. We're going to get some hot wassail around here. We need some hot wassail.
What even is a hot wassail?
I don't know, but it's hot, and it sounds like it's got booze in it, so I'm there.
I was going to say, it sounds like a hot toddy if it had an attitude.
Bring on the hot wassail.
Well, so in sports, I'm going to say USA Gymnastics.
Oh, God,
this
not again.
This made me so happy.
Not again. I don't know. I'm in my fantasy playoffs. Gymnastics is the furthest thing from my mind this week.
I know that's why I chose this, because I knew you'd have no idea and not care at all.
It's also been a monster week at work. I haven't had time to be on USA Today, which has all the gymnastics coverage.
Well, no, actually, this has nothing to do with the actual sport as much as it does with the, I don't want to say company, but corporation, the whatever.
Did they get disbarred by the International Olympic Committee?
Actually, they kind of disbarred themselves because they filed for bankruptcy today.
Ooh, that's...
They're facing so many lawsuits over the Larry Nassar sexual abuse scandal, which... If you recall, they've had financial struggles and leadership